Here we are for another episode of The Landing. I'm here with Benny and Yags again. How are you going, boys?
Well, thank you, Bong. Thanks for having me.
Definitely.
Good to be back.
Back to back. Well, we caught up, was it last week or 10 days ago, something like that? But with during the playoffs, we want to kind of fire them up pretty quickly because the things, as we've seen with a few injuries early on as well, the whole kind of like contender and like who you think can win it just changes literally game by game. It's actually quite absurd. And obviously the Americans give you so much content. So literally I've just been piling that many NBA pods and whatnot. So many thoughts are going on in my head and I just need to get them out somewhere. And I know you boys are the same as me, but so the second round started this morning. Bucks versus Celtics was at 3 a.m. I personally got up at like 4:40. Jeez, I'm the most tired guy now as we record this Monday night. But I got up 4:40 to watch the second half of the Celtics Bucks and then into the Warriors and Memphis game and then straight into work, which was not us, but definitely would do that again and we'll do it again. But what I kind of gathered from the second half of Bucks Celtics is, first of all, the Bucks seemed to be quite in control. Once they got that lead, which is kind of different to a lot of other series that we've seen, even like the Nets-Celtics game, like when the Nets got up, like the Celtics kind of like seemed pretty composed and kind of like would chase down any lead, but they couldn't get the Bucks. I think obviously they're winning a championship last year, a lot of their roster is extremely confident and just really know kind of how to set the pace of the game when you get a lead. So that was really interesting to watch. And you kind of saw a lot of the younger guys for the Celtics that haven't been there as much struggle to kind of know and like kind of shoot some ill-advised threes just to kind of try and cut the lead down all at once, but that's just not really how it works in the playoffs. But also another thing that I want to talk to Benny and Yags about is the Bucks' extreme size. Obviously, the Nets had some size, but a lot of the size that they couldn't actually play. To be fair, like Blake Griffin got in the game, but Andre Drummond like played limited minutes. Claxton was probably their go-to guy, but he's a bit of a liability at times. But that's what I found the most interesting thing about the Celtics. They looked really undersized, gave up a lot of boards. But did you guys watch the game?
Yeah.
You did? Benny, what do you think of the Bucks height?
I think it was mostly noticeable in just like the way that the Bucks were able to affect the Celtics shots. Now, obviously, like the Celtics settled for a ton of threes. I think they shot 50 in the end. Let me check that. Yeah, they went 18 from 50 from three. But I think it was just like their ability to affect their looks that they were getting. I've got a stat here that when defended by Giannis or Brook Lopez, the Celtics went 3 of 20 and they were one from 15 from two when defended by both those two. So they were really struggling to get good looks by there. And you know how sometimes like people are or players will try and make those defensive plays, but you sort of look and you go, oh, that person's just, they're a bit cold tonight. They're bricking it and they're not seeing the ball go in the hoop. But
yeah,
to my eye, like it looked quite visible that the Celtics were trying to work it out. You could try and see like the cogs turning over, that the shots were being affected by both of them. And I don't think it's panic stations for the Celtics. Like, they missed a bunch of threes, like they still got looks there. And the Bucks did shoot the ball well, and I think there's adjustments to be made there, but it was noticeable in the first game for sure, that especially with Giannis and Brook Lopez.
Yeah, I agree. I think their rim protection's great, and obviously Giannis being that help defender where he just covers the whole floor and exploits matchups and can help, like, you know, Drew out when he's guarding Tatum or whatever, because he's so big and athletic, he just gets to like everything. And I think, yeah, there was a stat that Boston only made 10 2-point field goals, which is the second lowest ever in a playoff game.
Wow.
So I think...
You know what it was second to? I actually saw this stat. Do you know what it was second to? It was the Game 6 Harden game against the Spurs when he just shat the bed.
Yeah, when Kawhi didn't play.
Is that when he put towel on his head?
Yeah. But yeah, I think... Yeah, I agree with Benny. I don't think you want to overreact, but I think probably Milwaukee probably did need to steal a game on the road without Middleton. And I think we're definitely going 7 now. But yeah, I think Boston need to figure out a way to score in the paint and to get easier shots, because I don't think shooting 53s is them. Like they're not the Harden, Chris Paul Rockets. They're not the Warriors of 5 years ago. Like 53s is excessive when they don't really have a great 3-point shooter. Like Tatum and Brown are great shot makers, but they're not like...
And put some respect on Grant Williams' name.
Yeah. But like Grant Williams isn't going to do what he did against Nets in this series. So
I just say that I reckon Grant Williams over like the first round and today, literally, I swear he never has anyone guarding him. He shoots the... always has the most wide open looks I've ever seen of anyone. It's ridiculous. And he carries on. He's just like, yeah, buddy, well, you're the fourth option. So you're getting all these wide open looks. Like, stop celebrating. It's actually triggering me.
Yeah.
Probably the same reason why Wiggins shoots the corner three actually pretty well.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, I've got a few things. One, I reckon this game one, I'm not overreacting, but I think it's the classic one of the Celtics would have known that Middleton's out. So they would come in naturally thinking, okay, like we might be able to have a stronger chance of beating them. So they might be a bit lax out of the gates. Secondly, the Bucks would be the opposite, missing a guy being like, all right, we desperately need to steal one on the road. So I reckon there's a big element of that, but also touching on what you were saying before, like it's a dangerous game to live and die by the three. And yeah, I really agree that you shouldn't be reliant on like shooting 53s and hoping you hit 25 of them, 30 of them, whatever. But also another thing that I found, and you saw it in frustrations with Tatum and Brown today, is that in the Nets series, they had a bunch of just small guards guarding them. Like whether it's Kyrie, Seth or Bruce Brown, he's a bit bigger, but like they're naturally already playing it. Like Drew Holiday, although he's a bit short, like he's not the tallest guy, he's a bull. Like he does not move off the line very easily. Someone like even like Portis is just a bit of length. Connaughton's a bit of an athlete. And even like someone like Wesley Matthews, who's been around the league for a while, has got that old bull strength. But they're naturally going to be, like, you could see it in their faces. They were like somewhat shocked at the like kind of like the defense meeting them halfway and bouncing off them. And they're kind of like a bit, I reckon they were a bit shocked with the contact, because they hadn't got too much of it from the Nets series. So I think that's also something they're going to have to adjust to. And yeah, I just don't think that you're going to get a game where Brown and Tatum shoot as poorly as they did today. Yeah, obviously I see them making some good adjustments in the second game and hopefully bouncing back.
When we came into the playoffs and in the back end of the season as well, when the Celtics were sort of really firing, like the question we had with them was like, okay, like they've ticked one box here. Tatum looks to have taken another step. But if Tatum becomes if he's finding it harder and other teams are selling out on him, like where's that shot creation, that other person you can go to? Jaylen Brown was pretty poor today. And so like, it'll be interesting to see like whether Tatum's able to rise above it, but I think they're going to just genuinely need more out of their second and third scorers to try and take the pressure off him as well a little bit. But I just wanted to pose something to you. I think one thing that we sort of touched on last podcast was we had the KD and Jason Tatum discussion. Yeah. And we were sort of talking about like passing the torch on and the tiers that we sort of have with the players in the league at the moment. And I wanted to pose a question to you. Is Giannis now in a tier of his own?
Yeah, I guess I'll go first.
I think so. Obviously during the regular season, you had the three giants, Jokic, Embiid, and Giannis were the MVP candidates for the whole year. And it was obviously such a tight battle, and we still don't know the result of that, but it'll probably be Jokic who wins it. But I think in terms of when it comes down to a playoff game, I think Giannis is just, he's head and shoulders above. Considering, even today, the Celtics defended him, perfectly, and he still had a really crucial triple-double. His passing was incredible today.
Yeah.
So he, even though he didn't shoot the ball well, and, the Bucks, the Celtics defended well today. They couldn't have done anything more against Giannis, but he still found a way, and that kind of reminds me of, when LeBron used to get a bit locked up. He could still do stuff, impact the game in other ways.
Yeah.
Which I don't think, KD can't do that. We just saw that. KD got locked up and he couldn't impact the game really any other way.
Giannis, when scoring's not going.
Yeah. Giannis is obviously such a good defender. So in terms of that question, Benny, until a Jokic or an Embiid sort of, if Embiid were to go on a championship run, then maybe he'd be in the conversation. But until one of those guys sort of does it in the playoffs, I think Giannis is, I think you're right. He's in a tier of one.
Sorry, you go, Lenny.
My opinion on that, yes, definitely. But and obviously you can only kind of make that judgment off what you're given. The reason I say that is that I think Jokic is up there with a full roster. I think if he has a Jamal Murray, I think honestly Benny, you and I being Warriors fans, I would have been petrified if Murray had a couple months and then came into the playoffs. So I think he's the one that, so I would honestly, I'd put him above KD just based on form. And also with KD and with Giannis as well, I think, and you kind of touched on it, is a player's ability when they kind of take that next step where, then the things aren't exactly going right for them and they can have a big impact elsewhere. That's when you become one of those all-timers. For example, KD last playoffs against Milwaukee, that was he was literally carrying them in all aspects, whether it's defensively, playmaking wise. Didn't do it this year, but last year he was on that level. Even you get people even Steph Curry at times where he's not shooting well, but you can still see the effect that he has, whether he has flirts with a triple double or has a bunch of rebounds. These players are smart enough to know when it's not their night and they can kind of impact in other ways. I think right now you have to have Giannis on his own at the top of the island.
Yeah, I agree with both those points. It's his ability to, what his floor is on an off night, which you could arguably say he had today. He still had a triple double and was able to be everywhere on the floor essentially. So
they won pretty comfortably in the end. In Boston.
Which is concerning for the Celtics if you do your best defensive game on Giannis. And obviously Tatum, and you can say, Tatum and Brown didn't play very well. But to have your, you're not going to get Giannis under 24 points, really, in this series. Yeah. I would say this is the pit of this of his point scoring this series. And you still lose at home. So it's definitely kind of concerning. And touching on what we're saying about Tatum and KD, obviously Tatum was the player of the series over KD last series. And Yags and I sat nicely on that one. But you saw Tatum today, things weren't going right for him. And he struggled to have a big impact on the game elsewhere. And there was a lot of complaining as well, which is also a concerning sign. But I think, obviously, after the first round, second round, conference finals, that's when you're going to be really tested as a player. And that's where we need to see if he rises.
Yep.
Yeah. Anything else on the Celtics or Bucks, or do I guess we'll move on?
No, we're good. Eh?
Yeah. Let's get to the Warriors. So they had game one against Memphis this morning as well. Outstanding game. Well, to be fair, the first half was a struggle because there was just that many foul calls. It was extremely frustrating for a sleepy Ollie on the couch who was trying to keep his eyes open. And trying to keep your eyes open during free throws is definitely much more challenging than open play. but Warriors came out shooting pretty well. Memphis kind of they kind of just went neck and neck most of the game. And then in the third, was it the second quarter that Draymond got booted or third?
Second.
Second.
Yeah, with so about a minute and a half to go in the second quarter.
Yeah, so anyone who's seen this probably watched it. But Draymond, basically, here's my take on it. He basically, in basketball, you don't want to give up an and one. So when, like, you foul someone and they score the bucket and they get a free throw. So a lot of defenders will basically rule that out completely and completely kind of whack the shit out of you to ensure that you don't get that shot up. He did one of those fouls on Clark, and then in the process, I feel like he was trying to, like, stop him, like, brace his fall, but he kind of latched onto his jersey. It doesn't look very good on camera, to be honest. But that got given a flagrant two, which is ejection. So he got ejected in the second quarter, which I said to Benny at that point, I was just like, okay, well, obviously this is unfortunate. I don't think it was, like, warranted him getting ejected. But if the Warriors can get this win, it's a big mental edge just based on winning without, like, one of your main guys, especially Draymond on defense and playmaking. But yeah, the Warriors pulled it out in the second half. Brick Poole was unbelievable again. Steph and Clay were kind of patchy at times, but especially Clay. But then Clay hit a clutch three at the end to put us up, and then missed a couple free throws and we won by 1 point. But my biggest takeaway from the game was in the fourth quarter, even without Draymond, the experienced Warriors guys really looked like they knew how to close out a game. And that's a really kind of important skill to have, which you can't really, like, you can't really teach it. You kind of just need to experience it before you can do that. But that was definitely something that jumped out at me. What jumped out at you, Benny?
Probably that I think that there's a couple of easy adjustments that Memphis can make. I think that when Tillman was on the court and Kyle Anderson as well, I thought they struggled along with their other big men to keep up with the liquidity or fast movement of the Warriors. And I thought at those times they got pretty good looks. And especially when Jordan Poole's on like that. And I think to play into that as well, I thought the minutes they got out of Melton, I know he didn't play well in the first playoff series, but he was plus 14 whilst on the court. And I think he at least gives him an option to maybe reduce the minutes of the others, possibly even shorten the rotation slightly. And I think that if they play into that a little bit more, they might be a little bit better suited to, like, countering what the Warriors are going with. And then I think the other thing that really jumped out at me is I thought the best way that the Warriors defended Ja, although he still had, like, a massive game really, was when Gary Payton was on the floor. And obviously we know, like, the lineup that the Warriors went with in round one. But if it's going to continue to be the look that maybe gives us the best resistance against Ja, it'll be interesting to see what we go with down the stretch against the Grizzlies, because he's easily our best on-ball defender at the guard position. But obviously, if you play him, then that's going to have to sacrifice someone else. So I'll be keeping my eye on that one.
Yeah, I think Gary Payton was superb. Like, obviously, he doesn't have a massive stat line, but, like, he had that massive dunk in the first quarter.
Oh, and, nasty.
That was like almost as good as Jar's one.
It was unbelievable. Like, watching a guy close to us, someone just so mean.
I think the biggest thing that Gary Payton did in the game was his rebounding. Like, you guys were playing that really, once Draymond was out, you played that really small lineup, especially in the last quarter, and that was the line. You'd think Memphis would have this massive edge and they'd be able to just get heaps of boards. But because if Gary Payton was just hustling in there, along with, like, Steph and Clay as well, and Wiggins and Porter, but I feel like Gary Payton was just, like, he was just a pest in there.
Yeah.
And he really showed his worth, even though it wasn't in the stat line, and obviously defending Jar as well. I think for Memphis, they'll be like, Jar was amazing, JJJ was amazing, but then Brooks and Bane were awful. So it sort of balances out. And then I think for the Warriors, like, it's a great win without Draymond. And Poole went off, which is, like, good to see. I do wonder, though, like, even though I agree that the Warriors closed it out, you still probably do get a bit lucky in terms of Clay missed two free throws. Ja had a layup that he could easily make again.
Yeah.
So I think for Memphis, if I was them, I'd also be like quite positive. So I think like out of the four teams that have played so far, even the two losers, you'd still be very positive. I think you've got to be like quite positive with how things have gone.
Yeah.
Like similar to the Milwaukee-Boston game one, I feel like there's plenty of positives and negatives for both teams.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's really interesting now because both home teams have to win game two. Otherwise, they're in massive holes.
It doesn't seem a surprise either that the two teams that won were the two that had a bit more experience in the situation. Mm. Like, albeit the Celtics have actually played a fair bit of playoff basketball, but not really high level, high intensity playoff basketball, in which, like, you know, some people on the outer are sort of viewing the games as like the Eastern Conference Finals, essentially. Yeah, so it's somewhat maybe a little bit of that played into it in terms of just the way to manage the game and just what to expect in those moments.
Yeah, and I also, like, I just think it's really good because I feel like both these series will go deep now. I was a bit worried about Golden State, Memphis, after the way that Memphis was so sort of chaotic against the Wolves, and they got lucky in a lot of those games coming back. I think a lot of that was down to the Wolves just choking.
Yeah.
But I think Memphis showed today that they're a proper basketball team. And when Jar's sort of in control, like I feel like he was for most of the game today, that's why they finished 56-26. Like, they're a really good team. They might be a year or two away from winning the whole chip, but I think we've got a good series.
Definitely. It's pretty nice that we've got these two games matched up for the rest of like the round. So literally like second day we get these two teams, these four teams play. Anything else on the Warriors or Memphis? Or should we get to that nice Embiid?
Yeah, let's talk about the big fella.
Yeah, so unfortunately Embiid, was it an orbital injury or whatever it's called? Like, so he's...
Yeah.
He got a massive elbow to the eye. It's the most Embiid thing ever. Like, I swear, he always just gets the worst luck. It's extremely frustrating. It's like, because like even like last year when he was an MVP candidate, got injured, missed out on that, and then got injured again in the playoffs. And Ben Simmons was crying up. But like and then now he's teamed up with Harden, who's just like, no doubt will cry up about something or do something. But yeah, the timeline's unsure at the moment, but like there's a chance that I think he might come back with a mask in game two or game three, which is huge. So it really puts it on Harden to be like, okay, you need to steal one of these first two games. You need to have a vintage Houston Harden, like 50-point triple-double.
Only happened in regular seasons, though.
Yeah, true. That's very true. But like for once, you need to do it in the playoffs. But yeah, do you guys think this series is over, or do you think Embiid will come back and fill it in for a chance?
I think if it's 2-0, it's probably over. But before I say anything, I just want to say the fact that Embiid got injured with like 3 minutes to go when they're up by 30 and it closed that game just shows that Doc Rivers, like, what are you doing? I mean, we were saying this during I think it was game one of the Toronto Philly series when we were at your place watching before the Nuggets Warriors game one. And he did the same thing. Like, they were all playing with like 2 minutes to go. And it just makes no sense. And that's the risk you pay. Price you pay for pointless. But yeah. I think Harden, I think you're right. Harden or Maxey needs to have like a career best game to steal game one or two, because I think Miami is such a well-balanced team that it's really hard to see Philly scoring without Embiid. Like, you can just see Spoelstra having some amazing game plan, locking Harden and Maxey up. Harden obviously isn't the player he used to be. He's lost a step. So it's sort of hard to see them scoring enough points to beat Miami. I guess, yeah, I think you'd be relying on like a massive Maxey game. Or a big Harden game. But I think, yeah, once Embiid comes back, then it's I think it's a really good series, but it's just if they're 2-0 up, it's a bit, probably a bridge too far. But yeah, it's a real shame that he got injured.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that. I completely agree with what Jag said. I think that it's probably like I'd probably say something like Heaton 7. If this is fully healthy and starting tomorrow, but obviously they're without Embiid, so and I think best case scenario, he's probably back like game 3 in Philly, and then as Jake said, to win 4 from 5 games. You know, if you're thinking that something's going to be a 7-game series, Heaton 7, then it's probably unlikely that you're going to see Philly winning 4 or 5. So I just think that unless Embiid surprises us and gets back sooner than first thought, yeah, the Heat will get through here.
Yeah, agreed. And then the final series, which is the series that I'm so keen for, the Mavericks versus the Suns. Obviously, I just want to quickly mention how ridiculous Chris Paul's game was to close out that series against the Cans, going 14-14 and not missing a shot, which is just absolutely disgusting. But Booker, it was good to get that like little run in game 6. Seemed to pull up okay, or at least like I was watching him. He played limited minutes, but he definitely like was playing hard. So he was really testing out that hammy, which is good. But then now we get like just a seriously succulent series of Luka versus Chris Paul, which is just like going to be just outstanding to watch. I have the Mavs winning this series. I just think Luka. I saw the other day that Luka's got the second highest average points per game in playoff history. Literally, it's absurd. Is it behind MJ?
Yeah.
So there's MJ and Luka, and then I assume like KD or whatever. But which is just ridiculous, and like it's definitely like the sample size is getting larger and larger. It's actually definitely like I just don't really see him slowing down in any playoff game. But what do you guys think? Where do you think this series is won, Yags?
Well, I think Phoenix have all the advantages personnel-wise outside of Luka. And I think, like, as obvious as this is, I think Luka will have to be – he'll have to be better than he was in those Clippers series for them to win. Because obviously he was spectacular in those series and they still couldn't win. And you could argue that – well, this Phoenix team is probably better than those Clippers teams. They might not have the same wing defense, but in terms of like an all-round balanced team, like we know the Suns finished, 67-15 or 66-16, something like that. So they're just one of the great regular season teams that have been to the finals. He'll be guarded by, you know, a mixture of Bridges, Crowder, Cam Johnson, I guess, when he's on. So I just think Luka's going to have to battle through a lot, but if there's someone to like solve everything, it's him. And Benny asked that question before about Giannis, whether he's in a league of his own, which we all agreed on. But if there's anyone that's coming into that league, it's someone like Luka, because cerebrally, he's probably the smartest basketball player on the planet. And I just can see him having a massive series. But I can also see him being perfect and then getting like swept. So I think, it's going to, and it's also going to come down to like Brunson. Can he keep it up? Because he was fantastic in the first series. You know, Maxi Kleber, Dinwiddie, like if they can get enough production from those guys just to keep it interesting. And then, because I don't think, you know, Dallas aren't blowing Phoenix out in one of the games. If Dallas win the series, they're going to be like, down to the last minute, Luka like really good in the clutch,
which is extremely challenging because obviously like Suns are one of the best clutch teams.
Exactly.
This makes it super interesting.
Yeah, like Phoenix are this amazing like you know jump shooting team. Like they just don't miss from two. Booker and Paul just are money from like 20 feet out.
I love it.
So yeah, it promises to be like I hope it goes like 6 at least. But I think Phoenix will win, but I think, we could be on the precipice of something special and Doncic might be coming for that tier that Giannis is in if he wins this series.
Benny?
Yeah, I just think Phoenix has too much. A little bit towards what Jag alluded to in terms of one of the universes that he can see. I think that as good as Bridges is and, you know, Crowder's a good body to throw at someone, I actually think Luke will have a lot of success in this series. You know, he's just a master manipulator on the basketball court. And so, like, I think he, in that sense, he's going to have a lot of success. I just worry about the others. I don't know if once Luke gives the ball up, they're going to have enough to go with Phoenix. And then on the other end, I actually think that Phoenix is really well built to expose Dallas's lineup defensively, and it's been holding up really well. And some of the metrics for them towards the back end of the season against Utah has been good, but you know, Utah's not Phoenix. And I think, like, you know, you can throw Finney Smith at Booker, but then you're sort of looking like an undersized Brunson, Dinwiddie. Like, Chris Paul's just going to get Lucas switched onto him or and stuff like this. And then they're still able to play Ayton, I think. And as much as I like Dwight Powell, I'm not sure how he's going to go in those scenarios. So I just think for me that I probably see this one, it could still go six just on the back of like two outrageous Luka games. And I could see Luka averaging like 36, 9 and 9 for the series. But I just also see that as not still being enough.
Yeah, I can agree. I'd love to see, and I guess like we're all kind of saying the same thing, just to a different tone, where like, yeah, he's basically saying that unless Luka is absolutely extraordinary and takes that next step, even better than like the Clippers series, then they're not going to advance. And like, I think, did they lose in six last? Or they lost game seven to the Clippers last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, seven. They were up 3-2.
Yeah, so like, I guess it's going to need like Luka to fully close the series, and the Suns are definitely a better team than the Clippers, I'd say.
Yeah. I wonder, can Luka, like, I don't know if he's capable, but could he have like a series where he's not like good defensively, but where he's not like a liability, where he's just like really sort of stamps himself? Like, if he has to guard a fair bit of Chris Paul, can he make that height advantage in that? Because he's a lot bigger and taller than Paul. Can he make that count?
The level of play that CP3 is playing is like extremely, just no one can stop that. But I think where it can get, where Phoenix have been exposed, and we saw it in the Pelican series, is they do struggle sometimes. I feel like stopping, like just thinking about how Ingram played that series, like he was able to like basically do like a lot of what he wanted, and even like someone like CJ. So maybe Luka could seriously carry them an average 45. Like, it's literally, like, it's ridiculous that we're saying this about a 23-year-old or like whatever, that like it's even a possibility, because it actually seems quite likely. But yeah, I think unless Booker comes back and his hamstring's not well, I don't see the Suns losing this series.
Yeah, I think that's certainly one of the worlds that if it was to happen, Dallas probably needs is, you know, we see a shell of Booker, and or there's, you know, Phoenix did struggle in the end, albeit Booker missed some of the matches, but like even in the ones that he played, they still struggled with the Pelicans. And you know, I suppose the other world is, does Phoenix turn out to be like, you know, one of these regular season machines that isn't quite the same machine in the playoffs? So I don't personally expect that, as I told you before, but I think the two avenues are either that or Booker's a shell of himself and actually is still carrying a pretty bad hamstring injury.
Yeah, I guess the only thing with Phoenix is whether, like, because they don't shoot free throws and they don't shoot threes at a great clip and they don't get offensive boards. Like, they're so reliant on the mid-range. just weather, like all it could take is Booker and Paul being cold for like 3 or 4 games and suddenly it's a series and suddenly Dallas have won it. But obviously they've done it all year, so why can't they keep doing it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I can that wraps up our nice second round chat. Thanks for coming on again, Benny.
No worries at all, mate. Good to be here as always.
Yags, cheers.
Thank you very much. Good to be here and can we get back shortly?
Definitely in the conference finals. But yeah, another succulent pod. Hope you guys are all enjoying. But we'll hear from us again soon.